Page 420, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasik Chaf. This is a continuation of what's a new Pasik, but it's a little continuation of what we learned. Basically, last time we learned when people fight, and they hurt a friend with a stone or with their fist, so then they have to pay the various damages that we're discussing. And we learned Virape Yirape, it means the doctor has permission to heal, and you have to listen to the doctor. Now the Pasuk speaks about if a person hits and beats up their own slave. But obviously not a Jewish slave, it refers to a non-Jewish slave. The Pasuk says as follows, Chayaki isha savdei, if a person will strike his slave, and the Rashi says he refers to a goyish slave, because later on the Pasuk says, Kaspi, it's your possession, you own them. Oya samosei, or his maid servant, Bashev it with a rod, with a stick. Umeis tachas yodai, and she will die under your hand. Nokim yinokim, you will be avenged. Meaning, Bezdin kills you with a sword. And in a certain respect, this is even different than if a person kills a non-Jew. This is speaking about a non-Jew slave. We learned already that when you buy a non-Jewish slave, slave or maid, so it doesn't matter, if it's a male slave, you give him a bris, he goes to the mikvah, he becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs that women have to keep, meaning all the negative mitzvahs of the Torah, any positive mitzvah not connected to time.
Whether he wants it or not?
Well, the Rambam says from the Gemara that you have to convince him to do it. What happens if he refuses and he says, I'm not interested in being a Jew? You work with him for 12 months to convince him, and then you let him go free. If he still refuses.
This thing, that's after you free him or when you hire him, the slave?
When you buy him, you don't hire him, you buy him.
When you're
speaking not a Jewish slave, the goyish.
Yeah, you buy an un...
When you buy him,
he becomes Jewish or whatever.
Right.
Because one of us, I mean, Torah.
Well, until then, during the duration of a slave, he's obligated in mitzvahs that of women we have to keep. Meaning you can't count it for a minion.
He keeps Shabbos.
He has to keep Shabbos. He has to keep kosher. He has to keep all negative commandments. And any positive mitzvah not connected to time.
Even
for instance, tefillin. No, but it's like a forced conversion. He gets a bris. He goes to the mikveh when you buy him. And he becomes what's called a partial Jew. Now, if you ever free him, then he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Whether he likes it or not.
Unless he gets a bris and he doesn't do the mitzvah, does he get punished?
Yeah, then he gets punished like.
But do we know why? I mean, why do we need it? I mean, why? I could see having him as a slave. Why does he have to become Jewish? Or why do we even consider letting him become Jewish?
Because the Torah doesn't want to have a non-Jewish influence in the house. In other words, the guy lives in your house. He's working for you. You want a guy bringing in crosses, well, cross or whatever. You want him to bring idols into the house and everything goyish into the house. So the Torah says, because it's like a forced conversion, he's obligated in X amount of mitzvahs, and then, so it says, here if you kill him, if a guy beats up a slave, beats him up and the guy dies, Bezdin kills you. Like you would kill another Jew.
Rabbi, what page are you
on? 420, now we're on 422 on top.
422 on top, you were on 420
all this. All this time, yeah. Okay, so the Pasuk says, if you kill your slave, in other words, even though he is, so to speak, your possession, but he's still a human being, and therefore the Torah says, if you kill him, you get killed. Now, what happens if the guy will get better, he'll survive for a day or two? I'll explain in a second what this means. Lo yukam, then he doesn't get revenged. Ki kaspehu, because it's your property. And this is what's called gzeiras hakosuf. Well, there's a logic to it also. But the Torah says like this. If you beat him up and he dies, you get killed. What happens if you beat up your eved, and he survived for a day or two, and then he dies, Then the Torah says nothing happens to you.
You're talking about your servant?
Yeah, you kill your goyish, your slave. Now, the Gemara right away asks a question, what do you mean a day or two? It's either a day or two. The Torah says, if he survives a day or two, so is it a day or is it 2 days? So the Gemara learns that when it says here a day or two, what does it mean a day or two? It means 24 hours. Uh-huh. Because if you hit him Monday morning, okay, what the Gemara means, a day or two, means it has to be a 24-hour duration. So if you hit him Monday morning, 8 o'clock, and he survived Tuesday, 9 o'clock, and then he dies, you don't get killed. Why? So the Torah says, why? Ki kaspehu. The difference is like this. The commentators explain, what's the difference? The guy died, the guy died. What was your intent when you hit him? If the guy died right away, that means your intent was to kill him. And if your intent was to kill him, you deserve to die. But if you hit him in a way that he didn't die right away, that means your intent wasn't to kill him. Your intent was to discipline him, to whatever. So then, because your intent wasn't to kill him, the halacha is you don't get killed. That's what the Torah is saying. Then you don't get killed. Now, what happens? Here's an interesting halacha. The Torah says, why don't you get killed? Because it's your property. Which means, what happens if somebody else beat up my slave? And a week later he dies? Then that guy will get killed.
Even after a week.
Even after a week. The Torah says, you don't get killed, ki kaspehu, because it's your property. Which means if it's not your property, then the din is, this person would get killed regardless. Okay, and it has to be in a way that, the Gemara learns also from the Pasuk, it has to be in a way that you hit him hard enough that he's going to die. What happens if it was a freakish thing? You know, basically the way you hit him, he shouldn't have died. You hit him in the foot, and the guy died. So then it's a freakish accident, then you don't do it because it's not your intention to kill him. It's only if your intention is to kill him, that's when you have it.
So even if you hit him in the foot, and within 24 hours he died?
No, it says it has to be enough of a hit to make him die. When you hit him.
Within 24 hours.
Right. No, but I'm saying, what happens if you just hit him on the hand? Okay, not enough to kill anybody. And the guy died within 24 hours anyway, you don't get killed. You have to hit him in a way that it's hard enough to kill him.
You had to hit him to his brain.
Well, I don't know if... Not all people have brains, so then maybe you have to hit him in the heart. Okay, that's the end of this pasuk. But again, it only applies to the guy's personal slave, and that's it. Now the Torah says, "V'chiyinotza anoshim." What happens if men are fighting? They want to beat each other up. V'nakvu, and a woman gets in the middle to break them up, and she happens to be pregnant, and as the pasuk said, by mistake you hit her, and she miscarries.
What page are you on now?
422. Pasuk Chav Beis 22. Second line from the top.
Yes.
Well, yeah, Yinutzi, Yinotzi, whichever way is correct, yeah.
Yinutzi,
yeah, okay. V'chi Yinotzi Anoshim, if men are fighting, V'nokfu Isha Hara, and they collide with a pregnant woman, V'yotzi Yiladeo, and her children come out, meaning whether it's one baby, two babies, it doesn't matter, V'lo Yiyasin, but there is no fatality, meaning the woman doesn't die, just the babies. So the din is anish yanish, he has to be punished. Kasha yashis olav balo isha, as the husband of the woman will cause him to be assessed, I'll explain in a second. Vinasan beflilim, and you have to pay by the order of the judges. Now, I have to give an introduction to this din. There's a big argument in the Mishnah Sanhedrin. What happens if I wanted to kill Reuven? Okay, I was taking a gun, and I was pointing it at Reuven, and I wanted to kill him, and I shot him, and he ducked, and Shimon got killed. Do I get capital punishment for that crime that I just did?
Yes.
Maybe not.
Thank you, Rabbi Martrieda.
In American law, it's yes.
Well, that's why we're not learning American law. That's why we're learning Torah law. In the Mishnah, there's an argument between two opinions. One opinion says, Niskaven lahare gezeh v'hare gezeh, chayev. You wanted to kill Reuven and by mistake you killed Shimon, you're chayev. Why are you obligated? Because the fact is you wanted to kill and you killed. Okay? Another opinion says, no. You can only be punished if you killed the guy you wanted to kill. The fact that you didn't kill the guy you wanted to kill, that was an accidental killing, and therefore you don't get capital punishment. Now what happened over here is as follows. You wanted to kill each other. Two men are fighting. The woman comes in the middle. You cause a miscarriage. So obviously, you're automatically not chayiv death. You don't get capital punishment for killing a fetus. A goy would get death for killing a fetus. A Jew does not get death, and we learned this in previous times, that a Jew does not get killed for murder unless if the baby is 30 days old. 30 days old after birth. Why? Because they are not, even though halacha considers life beginning from conception, and therefore it's forbidden to abort, unless if the mother's life is in danger, not for any other reason. If the mother's life is in danger, then you're allowed to do an abortion, otherwise it's forbidden. But nevertheless, you can't get capital punishment unless if you kill a definitely live person. Until they're 30 days old, they do not have what's called a chazaka, they don't have an established life of definitive fashion yet. And like we learned, that's why you make opinion of Ben, you redeem the firstborn on the 31st day. Why? Because until he's 31 days old, you don't know if the guy's kid's going to live. You're not going to pay money to a Kohen. Sorry. You're not going to pay money to a Kohen, and maybe the kid's going to die. Then you're never going to get a refund.
These Kohens, they don't give the money back.
The Kohen doesn't give the money back. So, but...
And this means, really, the abortion is not murder.
It is murder, but you don't get capital punishment for it.
Or maybe it's not even murder.
It's murder.
Because there's no...
You can't kill them. You can't kill the guy that did it. Because it's a doubtful murder. Because it might be that the kid won't survive 30 days. So then it's not a vibrant child. So you can't kill them on a doubt. You can't kill somebody capital punishment on a doubt. Maybe he killed them, maybe he didn't. Even circumstantial evidence in Torah is not enough to kill somebody because there's still a doubt. I mean, the Gemara gives an example. You see one guy chasing, Reuven is chasing Shimon with a knife. And he goes into a room. Nobody else is in the room. He goes into the room, comes out of the room with a bloody knife. You run into the room right afterwards and you see Shimon dead on the floor. That is circumstantial evidence. You cannot kill Reuven for killing Shimon. Because unless if you are not 99.9999% sure, unless if you're 100% sure that he committed the murder, which the Torah says is only through the testimony of two witnesses, kosher witnesses, you cannot kill the guy. So therefore, until a baby is 30 days old, it doesn't have a vibrant life yet, and therefore you can't kill the man for killing the children. What happens though if there will be, and the pasuk is going to continue, what happens if the mother got killed? So then it's a whole different, you know, whatever, we'll soon see a whole different thing.
When it says v'loyi ason, it means that she did not die.
Rashi said v'loyi ason v'isha. That means she didn't die. If you damaged her, you have to pay her. Here the damage was that she lost her babies. So as the halacha is, and again, like we learned last week, how do you estimate the value of the babies? So the halacha is how much a woman would be sold, valued as a slave if she's pregnant, and how much she would be sold as a slave if she's not pregnant. A pregnant woman is more valuable as a slave, because she's going to have a baby and you're going to have another slave. Right? So she's more valuable as a slave. So based on the amount, and that's how Torah decides the value of the children. Because again, they're not living vibrant kids yet. We learned last week, if you chop off somebody's hand, how much do you pay? The difference between how much they would be sold as a slave with two hands or sold as a slave with one hand. So the Torah says like this. Now let's see it inside. If two men are fighting, and they push this pregnant woman, and her children come out, meaning she miscarries, and there won't be an accident to the woman, meaning she will not die. So onish yonish, you have to punish him as the husband will assess against him, which the Gemara learns to mean what when the husband brings you to Bezdin, how much the courts assess you. The Gemara learns that it doesn't mean how much the husband will assess. It will assess billions of dollars. It means when the husband takes it to court, how much the Jewish court will assess the damages. V'nasem beflilim, and you have to give the money based on the judge's decision. What happens though, im osin yihiyah? What happens if there will be an accident to the woman? Then, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, you award a life for a life. And here Rashi brings down two opinions, like we just said. One opinion says, nefesh tachas nefesh, means soul for soul. You kill the woman, you get killed. Second opinion Rashi brings down is, you don't get killed. Why don't you get killed? Because you didn't intend to kill her. And if you intend to kill A, and you kill B instead, you don't get death penalty. So then what does it mean, nefesh tachas nefesh? Rashi says, the other opinion says, you have to pay money. How much money? How much this woman would be valued in the slave market? That is the value, the monetary damage that the Torah gives to a person. And this is so different than secular law. Like we were discussing last time. If you hurt a soccer player's foot, so then they'll charge you, you can make $10 million a year, and he's going to play for 10 years, you have to pay him $100 million. Yeah? Torah doesn't work like that. Torah makes everybody equal. How much a foot is worth to a person across the board? How do you figure that out? How much do it be sold as a slave?
But in Torah life, the same football player, the guy hit him intentionally. That would also stand for. He wouldn't have to pay the same price as a slave either, no?
If you kill a guy intentionally, you get killed.
But I'm saying, by Torah law, if the guy would have, let's say the guy is a great painter, and he would they would cut off his hand just because he's a great painter, so he won't paint anymore. He has to,
slave market.
Steal.
Same. Yeah.
If he did it intentionally, I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. A person is obligated in damages. The Gemara says, based on Psukim Chumash, in this parsha, in fact, the Gemara says, a person, Adam Mu'ed La'olam, Bein Ar, Bein Yashin, a person is obligated to pay damages under any circumstance of damaging, whether they're up or they damage in their sleep. For instance, the Gemara's example is, if you lay down next to a bunch of dishes, in the middle of the night, in the middle of your sleep, you break the dishes. Then you have to pay for the dishes. But what happens if you went to sleep first? And then while you were sleeping, somebody put dishes over there. And then you broke the dishes, then you don't have to pay. And it's extremely logical.
That makes sense.
Why does it make sense? Because a person has the ability, an obligation, by the way, to control yourself whether you're up or you're sleeping. Even when you sleep. You know, there are a lot of people that, you know, move around a lot in the bed at night, but if they're sleeping on a thin cot, they're not going to fall off. The question is, but every night they roll all over the big bed, all over the place. The answer is, because now they know they're sleeping on a small cot, they have the ability to control themselves. In Svarim it says, if you go to sleep and you want to get up at a certain time, you will get up without a clock. Because a person, by nature, has the ability to control themselves completely when they sleep. Therefore, if the dishes were there before you went to sleep, you're obligated to pay because you should have known and controlled yourself not to fall on the dishes. But if you went to sleep first, and then the guy brings the dishes, how in the world are you supposed to know the dishes are there? So then you don't have to pay.
Rabbi, may I interject here?
Oh, I guess so. Do I have a choice?
You brought up sports.
Oh, no.
And I happen to know a little bit about sports.
No, no, no.
Having spent 60 years of my life, I just want to say that the guy standing at the plate with his bat and the pitcher
throws a ball.
Like him.
Throws a ball on his head and cracks it open, yeah.
They don't
goes to first base. Goes to first base.
That's all.
That's
they
it.
Don't punish the pitcher at all. There's no law anywhere.
Free base.
No law anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bore everybody and
I know, so
mention
stop.
All the injuries. Mention all the injuries.
Okay.
That can come in a game and even death.
Okay. Now the pasuk continues. And this is a very interesting, so to speak, the way the oral explanation, the oral tradition, removes the simple meaning of the pasuk. The pasuk says like this: you should give soul under a soul, ayin tachas ayin, eye for eye, shein tachas shein, tooth for tooth, yad tachas yad, hand for a hand, regel tachas regel, foot for a foot, kviya tachas kviya, burn for a burn, patsa tachas patsa, a wound for a wound, chabura tachas chabura, a bruise for a bruise. Now, if you take this pasuk literally, what does the pasuk mean? If I knock out your eye, you knock out their eye. And therefore, like the Arabs, or people that take this sentence literally, they learn, you chop off somebody's hand, what's the punishment? They chop off your hand. You knock out somebody's tooth, they knock out your tooth. Right, this is the way the pasuk literally means. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and so on. The oral tradition, Teresh Baal Peh, comes along and Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God that ain't what it means. What it means is the value of the eye for an eye, how much the value of an eye is. Meaning if somebody knocks out somebody's eye, God forbid, how do you evaluate the damage? How much they sold in the slave market with two eyes or one eye and so on. And that's the damages that a person has to pay. But it doesn't in any way mean in a literal sense. Now, the question is, and the Mefarshim ask, so if that's not what the Torah means, why does the Torah say it?
That's a good question.
If the Torah doesn't mean eye for an eye, in a literal sense, why does the Torah use that expression? But you find there's two aspects. Imam Lazy just brings down, he doesn't explain it, he just says, well, there's great secrets over here in the Torah, and therefore the Torah had to write it this way because it doesn't only mean it in a literal sense, it means it in a much deeper sense, you know, and therefore the Torah has to use it this way. But you find many psukim and chumash, starting all the way from the beginning of Bereishis, starting from the beginning of Bereishis, when God said, "Vayemer Elokim," God said, "Na'asa Adam," let us make man. God didn't say, "Let me make man." God said, "Na'asa Adam," let us make man. So when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, you know, getting the Torah dictated to him, and God is dictating the Torah to Moshe, he says, "Right, Bereishis, Bereishis," but you know, God's dictating the Torah. He comes to this pasuk, "Na'asa Adam." So Moshe Rabbeinu, the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God and says, "Hey God, what are you doing? Do you know that people will make a mistake and think there's two gods and you're having a meeting with another God? Vayomel Na'asa, let us make man. Who's God talking to?" So God says to him a very profound statement. "Ksev, you write it like I tell you. Vareitza lite sita. Whoever wants to make a mistake, let him make a mistake. I don't care." In other words, God, in the Torah, allows for mistakes, for people to misinterpret. That's what God does. So even though obviously there's deeper reasons why God writes eye for an eye and things like this, but the Mefarshim don't elaborate on it. The Ibn Ezra talks a little bit about it, and they explain, but there's a logic behind this din too. Because they give you an example. If somebody, Reuven, knocks out Shimon's eye, okay? So what do you want to tell? Knock out Reuven's eye.
He really did that, or you're making it up?
No, I'm saying if a guy did it.
He did it? Okay.
I'm sure it happened in the example. Reuven knocked out Shimon's eye. So if you want to take the pasuk literally, so what do you have to do? You have to knock out Reuven's eye. But that's not always fair. Why? Because what happens if Reuven has only one eye anyway? So now you're going to knock out his eye, so he's going to be completely blind. But he didn't completely blind the other guy, he only knocked out his eye. So it's not always going to be fair. Right? Or we're going to see later, by knocking out your servant's tooth, you can have a baby tooth. Like, you come to a kid who has baby teeth, and you knock out his tooth, yeah? So you're going to knock out your tooth. His tooth is temporary, your tooth is permanent, so you knock it out. I mean, it's not always going to be fair. That's not the reason. The Chazal say, because God told Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, what the pasuk means is not eye for an eye, it means the value of an eye is what you have to pay.
Is this by accident or intentional?
Doesn't matter.
Because it seems that it is connected to the two guys with the lady.
Yeah, but he never intended to kill the woman anyway. It's accidental. So if I damage you accidentally, I have to pay.
And same thing for intentionally. Same.
No difference.
It's not fair, no? If you do it intentionally.
But it's monetary. No, that's only in criminal. In monetary, there's no difference. I broke your dishes. I hurt you. Yeah? I'm doing the mission in the morning. I'm chopping wood in my backyard. I'm allowed to chop wood in my backyard, yeah? And the top of the axe flew off, or a splinter of wood fell off and broke your window. Completely unintentional. I have to pay. I didn't intend. Tough luck. A human is responsible for financial damages, whether it was intentional or unintentional. I broke your window, I have to pay for your window.
So it's a difference between monetary and then...
By the way, and this is another interesting concept in halacha. Here you have in America, you have what's called replacement value or new value. Yeah? Let's say, let's forget insurance companies. You have a car that's 3 years old, yeah, and I smash your car by mistake, totaled, right? Now, a replacement car will cost me more than the car is really valued, right? So what do you have to pay?
Everything.
No, just the value, not the replacement value.
The value of a three-year-old car.
The value of this car, let's see, okay,
you
blue book value.
It's a three-year-old car, so
that's what I mean.
But that's not replacement value. To replace it maybe cost you more than the blue book value. Let's say. Right? Because they buy it at blue book value, they don't sell it at blue book value. Right? So you're going to want to buy a car, so they're going to charge you more than what the trade-ins take for it, right? So you don't have to pay to replace, because I didn't damage you that. Your car is $3,000, let's say. I damaged you $3,000. It's going to cost you $4,000 to get a new such car? Tough luck. I didn't damage that. So Besdin has to evaluate how much the money, the thing is valued. Not the replacement.
Isn't how much the thing is valued is how much you need to pay to buy
no,
the car today?
No, no.
So the guy is going to be out.
How much I would sell this car for? How much I would be able to sell this car for? Not how much I would be able to buy a new car for.
I'm not saying no. I'm saying a three-year-old, how much I could buy or sell. How much I could buy or sell.
No, how much you sell. Sell is less than buy. Does a used car make the money? No?
Yes.
You buy it? Well, if you're going to buy it and sell it for the same price, the Gemara says an expression, you buy it for a dollar and sell it for a dollar, what type of businessman are you?
If somebody is working for you and he parks his car outside of your house because he's working in your house and he gets damaged for his car, are you responsible for it?
No. Not unless you did it. See, let's say... Let's say a guy is parked outside your house working for you, yeah? And a tree, whatever, falls and smashes his car. Why do you have to pay? What did you do?
He was working for you.
So?
Unless you own the tree? Unless you own the tree. Or...
No.
The law doesn't apply to...
Unless if it was a tree that was ready to collapse... Because an added responsibility to make sure it doesn't fall. But you have in the Gemara about if a wall was shaky wall and then it falls down and damages, then you have to obligate to pay. But if it's a sturdy wall, what do you want from me? A purse. Let's clarify an issue which is very important for the rest of the parsha. In fact, there's me damaging, and there's my property damaging. There's two different things. Soon we're going to get into the Chumash in a few psukim. If my axe gores and kills your axe, right? I have to pay. Now, why do I have to pay for what my axe did? The answer is, it's your property. So what if it's your property?
You're responsible
to make sure that your axe should not be doing anything that it doesn't do. And therefore, we're going to learn later in the Chumash, and there's tractates of Gemara on this, literally tractates of Gemara, that an axe normally doesn't gore. An axe normally doesn't kill another axe. So the first three times, I only have to pay half damages. Because it's not normal for an axe to kill another axe, so I'm not so obligated to watch my axe.
Talking about an axe...
O-X. Now, if I make a pit in the street and you fall in and damage yourself, I have to pay.
It's public property.
What? So the Gemara says, why do I have to pay? I didn't throw you into the pit. The Gemara says, it's not yours because it's in a public place, but the Torah made it yours to pay. The Torah makes it yours to obligate you in payment. Okay? Then, you have another type of damage. I beat you with my hands. That's not my property damaging. That's me damaging. There's an interesting argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokesh. This is a world famous argument. The Torah says, if I light a fire in my backyard, I'm having a barbecue. And a normal wind comes, not a hurricane, tornado. A normal wind comes and carries my fire into your house and burns it down. You know, a normal wind comes and moves the fire into your house and burns it down. I have to pay. The argument in the Gemara is, what classification of damages is fire? Is it me? Or is it my property? Like if my axe goes out of my house and damages, my axe goes out of your my house and damages your property, I have to pay. That's not me, it's my property. What classification does fire have? Rabbi Yochanan, and that's the halacha, says fire is like an arrow. If I shoot an arrow or a slingshot and it breaks your window, it's not my property damaging you. It's me damaging you. So they say a fire is like shooting an arrow. And the other opinion says, no, it's not you, it's a man. Your property is damaging somebody else. So there's two types of damages that we're going to be learning about in the next number of psukim. There's me damaging and there's my property damaging. A person who damages is obligated to pay under all circumstances, intentional, unintentional, up, sleeping, unless, like we said, you go to sleep and then they bring the stuff over. But otherwise, you, when a human being damages, it doesn't matter intentional, accidental or not. If I bang into you and I break your glasses, I have to pay for your glasses. Even though it was a mistake. I have to pay for your glasses. If it's indirect damages, it's a whole different story. There's direct, there's indirect. Like I said last week, we gave the example. I'm throwing dishes down from the roof on top of pillows that they shouldn't break, right? And all of a sudden, I come and pull away the pillows. And you throw down the stuff. And they break. I didn't break your stuff. I didn't break your stuff at all. It's indirect damages. Court cannot obligate you to pay. Between you and God, you should pay. It's called Chayiv B'dinei Shemayim. But the courts can't obligate you to pay because you did not damage the property.
And the one that threw him from upstairs?
You know, he's the owner.
He's the owner.
Right. Let's say.
And if he's not the owner,
then you have to know. Did he know? Didn't he know? I mean, whatever. It's not his fault. I mean, if you organized that the pillows there shouldn't break, then he might not be obligated
so
to.
If this thing actually happens and they go to a bedin,
that's what they say.
That nowadays, or the time of bedin at the show.
If it's two religious Jews today, don't pass on like Torah says. Why should they go secular? You're supposed to go to business. Your business says.
Secular, they would make the guy pay. Definitely like this.
Secular law is much different than this stuff.
Rabbi.
But any damage that a person does, unless if it's indirect damages, you have to pay. What?
I know this rule, like I know your name. In a basketball game...
I forgot my name, yeah.
A guy was playing with glasses, and the guy who was defending him, they collided... The glasses broke.
No.
There was no case. There was no money exchanged. The guy that wore the glasses had to pay for his own glasses. Not the guy that broke them. They collided going for a ball.
They went to Schwarzer court. They didn't go to Besden.
Okay.
Okay.
There was a rule... Where today in basketball with all the black players.
Yeah. In fact, you have another interesting din, by the way. And here, by the way, many times they won't... There's a rule in Allah which is relevant to all this. I'm saying all these things because they're really relevant to all the psukim that we're going to be learning soon. There is a concept called dina de machus dina. The law of the land is the rule in monetary issues. Providing it doesn't go... against Torah. That means, there's a rule in the Gemara, Dina de Malchus Adina, the law of the land is the law. Which means, based in simple English, if the secular law says you're not allowed to go through a red light, then Torah says you're not allowed to go through a red light. If secular law says you're not allowed to do something, even though Torah law permits it, you're not allowed to do it. If secular says, don't keep Shabbos, then obviously you don't keep it. Okay, but as long as they don't go against Torah, to give you an example, forgetting Rabbeinu Gershom with polygamy, okay? Biblically, polygamy is allowed. Torah doesn't say you must marry two wives. Torah says you're allowed to marry two wives. So, if the government, let's say in America, says polygamy is forbidden, then Torah says in America you cannot do polygamy. You can't have two wives. Why? Because I'm going against Torah. The law of the land, you can't have two wives. So then Torah says you can't have two wives. What's wrong?
Yeah. I misunderstood something, I think. You said if the law of the land says don't keep Shabbos, you don't keep Shabbos?
No, no, you don't
keep it.
You don't keep what they say.
Oh, okay.
No. I said, well, if the law goes against...
so wrong.
Okay. If the law goes against Torah, then you don't keep the law which is going against Torah. Okay, I thought there was... obviously, I thought it was clear. Okay.
Yeah, but you can't have two wives in America. There's a law.
I said that.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Now, so, what happened, given, by the way, this happens a lot in schools. This question always comes up. The Gemara says, Cheresh means deaf mute. Shaita is mentally retarded, and cotton the kid under bar bas mitzvah. The Gemara says these three classified people, pegiyosin of meeting them is only trouble. Why? If they damage you, they don't have to pay. If you damage them, they have to pay.
You have to pay.
If they damage you, they don't have to pay. Uh-huh. If you damage them, you have to pay. Uh-huh. Okay. So the Gemara says, don't start up with them. Why? These people, deaf, mute, mentally retarded, and a kid, are not halachically mature to be responsible for their actions. Therefore, they're not obligated in mitzvahs, as we know, and so on and so forth. So technically, if a kid...
If a 13-year-old girl hitting another child, breaking the hands or legs...
They have to pay.
The parents? She's not.
No, I'm saying something. The kid has to pay.
She's a dog.
One second.
You know.
Now, the question is, what happens in school? Two kids get into a fight. It happens once a lifetime per school, and a kid breaks his friend's toy, glasses, whatever. You know, it happens. They get into a fight and they break it. So if you go completely by biblical law, tough luck. You can't obligate the kid to pay. The parents are not obligated to pay for what the kid did in Torah law. But the fact is, in civil law today, it became accepted that you do pay. So in many cases, Torah law would say, then listen, this is the law of the land. The parents are responsible for the kids. Pay. Pay for it. But technically, in Torah law, pure technical Torah law, you don't have to pay because they are not responsible for their actions, and therefore you don't have to pay. What?
Wouldn't it be like, could it be like that the parent of the child, that the child is like, is appendage of, the child is the appendage of the parent, so it's really, it's the property of the parents, of the child hurts, no?
In Torah law, the parent did not do it. If the parent did not do it, they don't have to pay. I'll give you another example along the same line. In biblical law, let's not get into political issues now, but in biblical law, a wife has no money. The money, anything the wife owns, belongs to the husband. Okay, that's biblical law.
That's why we live in this country.
Now, if a woman damages somebody, what's the halacha?
Husband has to pay?
No. What, the husband did it? What, am I responsible for what my wife does?
She's his property.
You better believe it, yes.
It's half and half.
No.
She's his property.
She's his slave.
The halacha, I'm saying, just keeping in mind the technical biblical Torah laws. A wife has no money. Halachically, anything she owns belongs to the husband. He is not responsible for what his wife does. The same thing, if my slave, my Eved Kanani, the Goyish slave, damages somebody, why am I responsible for him? No, I'm not responsible for him. He's a human being, has free choice, whatever you expect me to do. My animal, I can lock up, I can't lock up a person. So the halacha is, the woman is obligated to pay, she has no money, it's a debt. If she ever gets widowed or divorced, when she gets money, she has to pay the debt. There's no statute of limitations in halacha, by the way.
So if you want to get back at...
It doesn't make any sense,
though. Why? If you're going with the... One second. If you're going with the notion that halachically, the money that a woman has is the husband's, because that's the partnership in Torah law. I mean, in American law, you're told to freak out. In Torah law, husband and wife have their jobs and roles, okay? The husband is the supporter, and the wife is the one that, like the Gemara says, the husband brings home the wheat and she makes it into bread. Right? So, the financial, and because he supports her financially, the halacha is that whatever she has financially goes to the, in today's law, it's completely different, because it's community property today, and therefore it's civilly, it belongs to both, it's a whole different story today.
That's what I said, half and half.
But we're talking, I'm saying, in Torah law, I'm not talking about that. So, if the wife damages somebody, the husband's not responsible for what his wife does. She's an adult. And by the way, the same thing, they're coming back to your point. If there's a 13-year-old boy or a 12-year-old girl who are over Bar and Bas Mitzvah, they damage somebody's property. The parents and the Torah law are not obligated to pay. The kid's an adult. Why should I pay for what my kid does? The kid has no money? No. It's a debt. It's a debt. And whenever the kid gets money, they have to pay up the debt.
That's fair.
That's all.
But the guy could send his wife and say, you know what, damage that guy's house, I don't have to pay. You know what I mean?
Then she has to pay, though.
But she has no money.
Yeah, but...
she's not obligated to pay.
Someday she'll get divorced or widowed.
With interest, she has to pay?
No, there's no interest in Torah law.
Can you imagine, John?
There's no interest in Torah law.
She
has lousy credit.
Lolita,
darling, you should have been here.
Marty. Marty.
You
missed the whole
Marty.
Hey, she doesn't have a clean slate on her.
It's not a question of clean slate. There's no credit reports.
Yeah, but if she owes the money.
So she owes money, like everybody else.
What about the guy that...
What about she dies before him?
But tough luck.
Or the guy who she destroyed...
Then if her kids have money, they have to pay.
Well, it's her kid, it's their kid.
No, I'm saying not... If she had kids from a previous marriage, let's say. Whatever.
If she dies, and if she doesn't... they have kids, so she doesn't have to pay. So it doesn't make sense. So she can go destroy the whole town.
And if a kid goes, destroys the whole town, what do you do?
The parents are
No, I said in halacha they're not responsible.
If they are underage,
that halachically pegiyas and ra, they're not obligated to pay. It's tough luck. It's bad luck. You got your mazel is bad. You got hit.
But she can, like someone mature can do it purposely.
If they're mature,
if there's a vendetta of something.
Then they're mature. Then they're obligated for their responsible.
No, Lolita, when you become, money, so she doesn't pay.
Lolita, listen to me, dear. When you become Attorney General of the state of California,
okay.
Very soon.
But I'm listening.
If a couple gets a divorce, is the husband obligated to give her any money?
Yeah, ksuba.
Yeah, it sounds like she made these laws.
Who?
Bye.
I made him up. What? The ksuba. It's questionable what it is. In the olden times, there was enough for her to survive. But even then, in Torah law, when a man died, the estate had to support the wife.
A divorce?
Divorce, and she gets the ksuba, and that's it. But it was enough to live on for a while. You owe him. You own him or owe him? Oh, okay.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
I thought when I was coming tonight, I'd hear the history of the Jewish people, something I never heard before.
Trust me, anything you heard tonight, you never knew.
That's right.
Okay, no.
That's right.
Okay, so now the Torah says, all these punishments is ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, and this is what's called the uniqueness of Torah Shebal Peh, that it doesn't take it in a literal sense, it takes it in all the values. Now, in addition to all this, it's understood, you have to, if the person was in pain when you did all these things, like you burnt somebody. So not only the damage of the hand, but there was pain involved. And everything else, all those things have to be taken in consideration, and they all have to be paid. According to Beis Din. Okay, then the Pasuk says, not only, by the way, in these Pasuk, the second Pasuk, Kviya Tachas Kviya, Petzah Tachas Petzah, it refers to not even, so the first Pasuk, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, you're talking about a guy who knocks out his eye or tooth or hand or foot. So those are major damages. The second Pasuk talks about lesser damages, not permanent damages. You burn him, you wound him. And the chiddush of the pasuk is, a guy can come along and say, listen, I burnt your hand, it's going to heal one day. Big deal, why do I have to pay you? You know, I wounded you. Why do I have to pay you? And half a year from now, I'll be healed. The din is no, you have to pay the damages. Even though it's something that's going to eventually heal, the Torah says it's still, and that's what the whole second pasuk is saying, burn for a burn, and wound for a wound, bruise for a bruise, you still have to pay.
What if it's not your property?
No, this is not speaking about slaves, this is speaking about you hit the woman.
No, I think before you said there's two concepts, whether I'm responsible for my, regardless if it's my property or... And if it's not my property?
If it's my property, I'm responsible. If it damages, if it's...
Unintentional.
No, but only if it's... that I could have protected it. For instance, if I lock up my animal in a barn properly, okay? And then somehow the animal got out and damaged in a not normal way, I don't have to pay. Because what do you want? What did you want me to do?
It's called accidental. No?
Yeah, but I'm saying a person though would still be obligated to pay if it's himself. If it's your property that damaged, you're only obligated to pay if it was something that you could have stopped, and you were negligent by not stopping it. If my animal goes into your house and eats all your fruit. Okay, so then I have to pay because I shouldn't have allowed that my animal should go into your house. But if I tie my animal on a leash and it's securely fastened and something comes, whatever, in a freakish way and the dog runs away and damage, then I don't have to pay. Because my property's obligation, because the question is, my axe damage, why do I have to pay? Why is it different than my kid? My kid damages under bar mitzvah, he damages, I don't have to pay. Why my axe damages, you have to pay? Because halacha is an axe, you're not obligated to pay because your axe damaged. You're obligated to pay because you are responsible to make sure that your axe doesn't damage. So if I did it, what I was supposed to do, and a freakish thing happens, then I don't have to pay. I'll give you a simple example. If a hurricane comes and picks up my car and smashes it into your house and busts down your house, I don't have to pay. But if I parked my car on a hill, okay, and left it in neutral, and my car rolled down the hill and smashed your car, then halacha says I have to pay.
Carelessness.
Right. What happens though, if I locked my car and put it in park, yeah, and hoodlums come and break open my car and put my car into neutral, and it rolls down the hill and damages, then I don't have to pay. What do you want from me?
You have to prove all this.
Obviously you have to prove it. But the truth is, the one that wants the money, if you want to extract money, the burden of proof is on the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, if I want to extract money from you, the burden of proof is on me, not on you. The burden of proof is on the one that wants to take up money.
We had a lot of cases that the pit bulls, and I mean nowadays, that
pit bulls, you'd have to pay complete damages.
They're playing with the kid, they keep biting, they keep biting.
Marty.
They keep hurting the neighbor's kids, right? Or they kill the kid. So that the owner of the pit bull, by Torah law, would have to pay them.
Sure he would.
And also it's they put the dog to death, but they don't, they prosecute, but yet, so that means the owner would have to only pay the damages, not, would not be considered punishment of death, no?
We're going to see in a few psukim, not today obviously, in a few psukim we're going to see if an axe gores a person and kills them, you stone the ox. Sometimes you have to pay addition to that damages to the person that you killed. I mean, obviously to his kids. And sometimes you don't.
It's a lesson in where to stay and where to work and where to live.
Yeah.
Where to not stay.
Okay, let's. Oh, it's 9 o'clock already. Okay.
Shukaya. I'm glad I.